from 6 on 2FM.
And a very good evening from Damien O'Mara. You are very welcome to the Friday edition of Game On. We say it every Friday. We mean it genuinely from the bottom of our hearts. But we are here on the eve of what is a frantic and frenetic weekend of sport. We're going to get straight down to business in a moment. Live to Hoylake, Greg Allen on duty at the Open. We've got Shane McGrath looking ahead to the 136th edition of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship Final. We're going to hear from John Kiley and Derek Ling as well. Big notable result in Ireland's group at the FIFA Women's World Cup. News on that. Jane Mangan on racing, including the Oaks at the Curragh tomorrow. And anything else that tickles our fancy between now and 7 o'clock. You can text us. Our number is 51552. Or you can tweet the programme at GameOn2FM.
Game On 2FM.
It's great to have your company. We are going to get straight down to business with the Open Championship, one of the great jewels in the crown of world sport. It's ongoing at the Royal Liverpool Golf Club at Hoylake. Greg Allen is on duty for us. And Greg, I'd imagine when Brian Harman got up out of bed this morning and dreamt of what the midway point at the Open could look like, surely the leaderboard exceeds even what his expectations might have been at the start of play today.
Yeah, I think that Brian Harman is very, very happy where he is right now, which is out of the wind, and there's not that much of it, but just enough wind this afternoon to make conditions more difficult than they were this morning. So Harman added around a 65 this morning to his 67 from yesterday, so he was only one off the lead overnight. He started off with four birdies in the first five holes, then a run of pars, no drop shots, one particularly miraculous up and down on the 12th hole where he was in a bunker and had no shot out of the front of the bunker and had to chip out or splash out backwards out of the bunker, and then he holed the chip. So it was that kind of day. And then he came to the 18th and hit two wonderful shots on the 599-yard par 5 18th with out-of-bounds all the way down the right-hand side. We've had 8s and 9s in that hole. It's a really tricky one. He negotiated it in three shots. A wonderful 15-foot putt, the exclamation mark to the final deal of what was a brilliant round of golf. And at 10 under par, he currently has a 5-stroke lead over the field. So Tommy Fleetwood is tootling along quite well. He shot that round of 66 yesterday. Incredible local support for Tommy Fleetwood. He's popular anyway. And then when he's only living from, you know, he's originally from 20 miles up the road in Southport, you can imagine how he is as a local Liverpool favourite here. So Tommy Fleetwood, 5 under par, level par for the 12 holes he's played. He dropped a shot on the front nine on the 6th on the par 3, but then hold a bomb of a putt from around 45-50 feet at least on the 10th green. So Tommy Fleetwood alone in second place on 5 under, so he's giving chase. He's got two par 5s to come, so he could possibly, you know, could negotiate the last 6 holes and 2 under par if he plays well, and that would give him a chance of, you know, obviously of being in the final group tomorrow with Brian Harman. Looks like a certainty that Brian Harman is going to be leading overnight. So Fleetwood 5 under, 5 behind Harman. Min Woo Lee, absolutely an informed Australian. He's just shot around a 68, so he's posted a mark of 3 under par, and that just shows you just how far back the rest of the field are. So Harman 10 under, Fleetwood 5 under, Min Woo Lee and Shubhankar Sharma of India, and also Jordan Spieth on 3 under par. Spieth still has 4 holes to play, and all of that plays into the position in which Rory McIlroy is in right now. He added a round of 70 today to his round of 71. Now, there were mistakes today. There was a good start. He birdied 2 of the first 5 holes, 12-footer on the first, and then he chipped and putted on the 5th, so he got off to a good start. But there were mid-round wobbles, and he bogeyed 2 of the easier holes on the course, the 11th, the shortish par 4, and the 15th, the very makeable, birdieable par 5. They're not that really easy birdie holes on this course, but they are definitely 2 of the better ones. He bogeyed the 2 of them, but he finished by holding a 10-foot putt to save par on the par 3 17th, and then birdied the 18th, holding from around 5 feet, getting up and down from 45 yards, and that put him in a pretty good mood when I spoke to him afterwards.
Yeah, important. Certainly important to me. I, you know, got off to a great start. It was a couple under through 9, and then, you know, gave those shots away, you know, on 2 of the sort of easier holes on the course, 11 and 15, but, you know, it was nice to at least get one of them back on 18 there. So yeah, it played tough. Played really, really tough. 10 under par is unbelievably impressive out there, and yeah, you know, we'll see what the weekend holds. But, you know, after 2 days, I'm pretty happy with my 2 days' work.
gone are the days when, you know, people used to say that you prospered in good conditions or just soft conditions underfoot on a golf course. You seem to have every sort of gear in terms of playing hard courses in difficult conditions, and there could be some of those over the weekend. Are you prepared for that? Or are you also going to welcome it?
Yeah, I mean, I think with, you know, the way I've been able to flight my iron shots, and yeah, I mean, I think the week last week in Scotland was great preparation for what we faced the last couple of days. So, but yeah, I've felt, you know, more comfortable in the wind over the last few years, and yeah, I mean, I feel like I can perform in all sorts of conditions. So, you know, I'll you know, whatever it throws at us over the next couple of days, you know, I feel like I'll be prepared for it.
And it seems to be a case that, you know, this is a course playing more like Carnoustie than maybe a 20 under in Troon or something like that. Is this the way Lynx golf is perhaps shaping up in your mind as being the better for you?
I don't really like to play favourites or feel like one style. You know, maybe 10 years ago, you know, a certain style suit my game better, but, you know, I feel like I've become pretty adaptable to all conditions that we play in.
So McIlroy very much in contention here. At the moment, he is tied for 12th place, and he's on our main leaderboard here. Obviously, he is in position to challenge for the weekend, but it does look as though Brian Harman's going to have to come back towards the field a little bit. But I suppose the way of putting this is this. McIlroy shoots 71-70 over the first 2 days in tough conditions. If Harman shoots 71-70 over the last 2 days, that'd be a pretty good return, and that would mean that the winning score would be something like 10 under, 11 under. So that, I think, is where a lot of the players behind him are looking at. You've got the US Open champion Wyndham Clark at 2 under par. As I said, you have Jordan Spieth at 3 under par. Cameron Young, second last year in St Andrews, at 3 under par. Plenty of proper, decent, strong performers in that top 12 who can challenge Brian Harman, but the diminutive American has really set quite a cracking pace here. He was runner-up in the US Open in 2017. He's inside the world's top 30. He's had a very, very good year, Brian Harman. He's a Ryder Cup contender, and he at the moment has a commanding lead of 5 strokes over Tommy Fleetwood. And just to give you an idea of the rest of the Irish, it could be a case that we might only have McIlroy around for the weekend. Shane Lowry at 2 over after 10 holes. There's pretty tough holes to come there. And 3 over or 4 over looks like being the cut. And that means that Patrick Harrington, 4 over after 13, looks like he might be right on the cut mark. Maybe it's going to be 3 over, but could well drift to 4 over. Seamus Power at 5 over after 13 looks like he's at least one outside the projected cut. Darren Clark on 8 over. And Alex Maguire, who shot an 80 today to add to his fine 72 from yesterday, they will not be around for the weekend.
Greg, just to look at some of the scoring, depending on the draw and depending on what time you've been out over the past 2 days, it appears to have had a very, very significant impact on just how challenging Hoylake is presented to you.
Yeah, well, the thing about Lynx golf is the draw is terribly important because of the fact that we're right by the sea here. So the winds do tend to be quieter in the morning and raise during the day, and that's been something of the case over the first 2 days. But we haven't had any sort of really blowy days, but just enough wind to make this very testing setup of a golf course quite tricky. Now, the big thing about Hoylake are the bunkers. This is a very flat piece of land. It needs strong bunkering to be strategically difficult, and it is very well bunkered. In fact, yesterday was probably too well bunkered because the sand in the bunkers was very flat yesterday, which meant that when the ball rested close to the face of the bunkers, it didn't roll back down into the middle of the bunkers to give players a chance. So last night we saw McIlroy right up against the face of a bunker, John Rahm almost exactly the same, having to play out not sideways in McIlroy's case, although he probably should have because he didn't get out of it the first time, but we saw Brian Harman today have to come out of a bunker backwards. And yesterday, overnight I should say, the R&A were aware that the bunkering might have been a bit severe, so they got the green staff to come out early morning, first light, and they raked the sand up the bunker faces just enough for the ball to come down into the bunker and give the players a chance of playing out a normal style bunker shot if the ball went in the way it should go into a bunker, probably hitting the face and coming back. There are still some bad lies. We saw Brian Harman, as I said, have a very bad situation today, but he retrieved that with a backwards bunker shot out of the back of the bunker and then chipping into the hole. So the bunkers are the big strategic defence here. But when the wind blows, because the bunkers are so well placed The tee shots here are often slightly at an angle to the fairways. There are not that many which are straight down the fairways. So you've got to go over bunkers and then judge the amount of rollout the ball has, unless it might go into a bunker on the far side of the fairway. It is the best antidote to this so-called debate about length the ball goes off the tee. Strategic bunkering like this, this would solve the problem every time, because it's just not a golf course where you can take driver in every hole.
Yeah, I'm following the tracker on the BBC website, and I've been listening to the Open Radio, which they have on their app, which if people are out and about, it's a fantastic way of following it if you're not in a position to listen to you on Saturday and Sunday sport over the weekend. Poor old Scotty Scheffler, I think the wheels are falling off the wagon for him. He's had back-to-back bogeys, and based on the BBC tracker, he's eaten the head off the caddy and is now eating the head off the course because he's complaining about how thick the grass is, which perhaps is a reminder of how punishing links golf can be in a very, very short period of time. But listen, Greg, there's a five-shot lead or five-shot cushion there. Listen, having watched this event over the years, and you've seen far more of them at close quarters than I have, that can disappear very, very quickly. So it's all still to play for, albeit a handy cushion for Brian Harman.
Well, I'll just give you an example. Christo Lamprecht, the absolutely monstrous Lee Long hitting South African, he has just added around a 79 to his 66 from yesterday, and he might make the cut on three over par, should make the cut on three over par, but just barely. But that's what a 13 shot differential between round one and round two, and that's what this particular setup could throw up. Goodness knows, if rain comes tomorrow and a bit of wind, it could even get tougher. But what we're not going to see is what we saw at St Andrews, a 20 under par win like Royal Troon or something like that. You know, it's not going to happen. Yeah. Here, this is almost like a US Open setup, but on a links course.
I know your head and your heart and everything is in Hoylake. You'll have one eye though on Monaco this evening. We had news of Rashida Adeleke's professional debut on the programme last week. She's in Diamond League action in Monaco tonight, and what could be a very, very notable night for a number of Irish athletes.
Yeah, well, firstly, it's Rashida Adeleke's Diamond League debut, and she does so ranked number 4 in the world in the 400 metres. The elevation in her status since last year is just astonishing. 5th in the European final, and anybody who watches that European final will have noted that she was in 3rd place or thereabouts with about 50 metres to go. It was her 51st race of 2022, and she didn't really fade. Just other athletes went by her, but at the same time, it was a huge marker in her career. And her Irish record of 50.5 in that European final, the degree to which she is better than that right now is illustrated in her new Irish record set just a few weeks ago in Texas of 49.20. That converts to around 10 metres of track quicker than she was when she finished 5th, setting an Irish record in the European final last August. So she is just one of the world's best 400 metre runners right now, and we saw with that 200 metre appearance during the week in her first race as a professional that she is now also very proficient at the 200 metres, which she says she actually prefers. And of course, the 200 metres was her original event, 22.36 seconds in her debut race during the week in Hungary. That gives her enough kind of sharp edge type of finishing and preparation for this evening's race. But she'll be up against Sydney McLaughlin, who's, you know, the Olympic gold medalist in the 400 metres hurdles. She's number 1 in the world this year at 400 metres. McLaughlin, the McLaughlin Lavrone, she's recently married, so she's up against her. So McLaughlin will be in lane 4, Adeleke will be in lane 5, and very strong performance as well. Natalia Kaczmarek, the European silver medalist, she is in lane 6. She's also a sub 50 second 400 metre runner, just behind Adeleke in the world rankings at the moment. She's 5th in the world rankings. And Lieke Klaver of the Netherlands also has dipped under 50 seconds this year, 49.81, and she's a super fast 200 metre runner, so she may well also be going out very, very hard in lane 3. So those middle lanes 3, 4, 5 and 6, I think there's a really strong chance of Adeleke challenging Sydney McLaughlin. If she should beat Sydney McLaughlin, Adeleke goes to another stratospheric position in the world of 400 metre runners running right now, because McLaughlin is the number 1 in the world this year. But I think second place to McLaughlin tonight would be a great result.
It's interesting, you know, you talked there about switching from one discipline to the other. I had the pleasure of interviewing Rashida at the Sports Awards this year when she won, I think, Young Sports Person of the Year. And the way she broke down how the challenge of going from 200 to 400 And it's not quite saying Usain Bolt is going to become a marathon runner and you'll expect him to win the London Marathon next year, but the lactic acid and the schedule and everything else, I don't know that we fully appreciate or give credit to athletes for the elite nature with which they can jump from one discipline to the other discipline and compete so impressively.
Sorry, just a moment. I actually just heard that McLaughlin is now just pulled out of the 400 metres tonight. Just heard that now, literally. Sorry, I missed your question there. An American journalist has just shown me a piece of news that so it looks like McLaughlin has an injury. Now, that's very interesting because clearly it was to be her last warm-up race before the World Championships in Hungary. And that means that victory tonight is well within Rashida Adeleke's grasp. She is, by the looks of things, just going down through the field, she is the fastest in the field this year. So on her Diamond League debut, the chances of a victory for Rashida Adeleke are pretty strong.
Wow.
That race is at 7:15. It's only an hour away. So, look, that would be extraordinary. Sorry, I missed your question.
No, listen, and for good reason. I was making the point that having spoken to her at the RT Sports Awards back in December, to go from 200 to 400 and to be able to compete at this level in a relatively short period of time is an unbelievable level of adapting from one discipline to another. And, you know, I know people will say, Asher, if you can run 200, you can run 400. But it is such a change when you're an athlete who is as honed as these athletes are.
Well, the thing about any 20-year-old athlete on an upward graph like Rashida Adeleke is that every time they step on the track, they can set a personal best. They haven't crested their peak yet in terms of their career, and that might not happen for another few years. So Adeleke started out as a 200-meter runner, 100-meter runner, in fact, and 200-meter runner. She was only introduced to the 400 meters by her coach in Texas. And this is a really interesting thing because if you look at the physique of Rashida Adeleke, long legs, strong, you know, she just looks like an archetypal 400-meter runner. So this looks like it was a gradual move to the 400 meters. And Coach Edric Flo just saw in her immediately that she had 22 point something 200-meter speed when she went to college 2.5 years ago. Mm. So she actually had the speed already ingrained in her ability, and it was just a matter of dialing in some of the strength. And the strength came really quickly to her. In other words, she had natural strength, and they didn't even do what you're supposed to have in 400 meter running, which is about 2 years of training to adapt from 200 meters to 400 meter runners running before you become a really proficient 400 meter runner. She just made the step up almost naturally with about half a winter of training. And I think when Coach Flo saw that, he saw that he had a world-class athlete on his hands. But I think anybody in Tala Athletic Club will tell you that Rashida Adeleke, when she was 15, she won the European under-18 championship when she was 15 in the 100 and 200 metres. And I think that's an indicator of the talent level that she has. You know, that's Rashida Adeleke, a born 400-metre runner by the looks of things.
Yeah, we'll wait and see how that progresses. Greg, thanks so much for being with us. Greg Allen.
We do, incidentally, Damien, have two others tonight in Diamond League.
Oh, yeah.
We have Kieran McGeehan in the women's mile, and we also have a wonderful thing to see, Sarah Lavin in the women's 100-metres hurdles. Both of them really deep fields. You've got Kendra Harrison, the second fastest of all time in the women's 100-metre hurdles, and for Sarah Lavin to be in lane 6, Harrison is in lane 4. What a chance for Sarah Lavin to attack Dervla Rourke's record of 12.65. Sarah Lavin has run 12.73 this year, so only 0.08 of a second separate her from Dervla Rourke's Irish record. That could possibly go tonight. You never know if Sarah Lavin gets it absolutely right. And also in the women's mile, Kieran McGeehan will be chasing Sonia O'Sullivan's 29-year-old Irish record of 4 minutes 17.25, and she's going to be in a great race, which includes Faith Kipyegon, the Olympic and world champion and world record holder in the 1500 metres, and also Laura Muir, the Olympic silver medalist. So high class company for both Kieran McGeehan and also Sarah Lavin, and of course Rashida Adeleke. Three female Irish athletes in a Diamond League meeting. It's never happened before, coming from the Ireland of Ireland.
Okay, we look forward to it over the course of the evening. Greg, for now, thanks very much. We'll have more from the Open later on in the programme. We've much more still to come. Jane Mangan on racing, reaction to the soccer earlier, and after the break, John Kiley, Derek Ling, and Shane McGrath.
2FM.
Game on.
Hurling.
And it's Gaelic Games next. The eyes of the Gaelic Games world will revolve around Croke Park at 3:30 on Sunday afternoon. Kilkenny against Limerick in action in this year's All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship Final. We're going to hear from Shane McGrath in just a moment. In advance of that, though, let's hear from both camps shortly from the 4-in-a-row chasing Limerick manager John Kiley. But first year on the job, and a big Sunday awaits for the Kilkenny manager, Derek Kling.
Well, this year has just flown by, to be honest. It's been, you know, pretty intense, the season. It just rolls around really quick and the games come thick and fast. So, look, we're delighted to be here. And if we're reflecting back on a couple of the games that we've played, probably from time to time, we maybe slip out of a game maybe for a few minutes. But the reality of it is, when you're playing top opposition, they get a run on you as well. And, you know, they get their spell. And it's about how you respond to that. And I think what has been really positive from our side is that at all times we've responded in a really good manner. And I think we've got a contribution from the bench. And I think, you know, the attitude of our players, you know, when the going gets tough, they, you know, they still look for the ball. They're capable of making those tough decisions on the pitch. Very easy to do from the sideline, you know. So you need players that are able to take on that responsibility, and we have a number of those players. And I think it's about developing that even further, and we're going to need more of that, I think, with what lies ahead. But, you know, the improvements will need to be there, but I think we're more than capable of doing that. We get to represent Kilkenny. It's a fantastic place to be now, and it's about making sure that, you know what, we give a really good account of ourselves and go at the challenge.
It's a repeat of last year's All-Ireland final, and so you're well acquainted at this stage with Kilkenny. You know exactly what to expect. Were you impressed with them in the semi-final against Clare?
Yeah, I was at the match, and obviously, you know, they played extremely well. Clare brought a huge challenge in that second half, and they found the answers to all the questions that were asked on the day. And I think, you know, they're a really, really strong team. They work extremely hard. They're very efficient. You know, I think they had only 4 wides in the semi-final in total. So they're a very, very accurate team. If you give them chances, they're going to hurt you. So, you know, we've our work cut out first, but we've prepared well and we're going to give it our best shot. You know, if we're going to have a chance of beating them on Sunday, we're going to have to get our shot efficiency down into a level that's going to be competitive. And number two, and probably most importantly, we're going to have to work really, really hard. And, you know, that work rate has to be there from the start to the finish. So we'll give it everything we can. We're looking forward to it. And hopefully we'll give ourselves an opportunity when it's coming down the stretch.
That's John Kiley. And in advance of that, the Kilkenny manager, Derek Ling, in advance of Sunday's All-Ireland final. Joined to look ahead to it by Shane McGrath. Shane, how are you?
All good, Damien.
This is like Christmas Eve.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And I suppose as a player, you know, it's the night that you might get a bit of sleep, but I don't think too many of the players are going to get a full night's sleep tomorrow night, Damo, between one thing or another. But look, with the way the sports science and everything is now, I'm sure they've been told well in advance that it's the sleep all week you need. So however excited we are, I suppose, watching on, you know, the excitement as a player, it's very hard to understand it, I suppose, unless you're lucky enough to do it. But yeah, it's Friday evening, you know, I suppose it's maybe getting lost with all the sport that's going on there, Damien, as you know very, very well, with the golf and with what the girls are doing in Australia there with the soccer and with everything that's going on. But look, we're here now. It's All-Ireland final day. The debate for whether it should go back or not, hopefully we'll be left off for another little while, and we can just look forward to hopefully another cracking All-Ireland final like we had last year.
Yeah, but even from a Gaelic Games perspective solely, like, it was kind of Tuesday before we'd all caught breath after the football, and then you roll straight into this weekend. Like, even a little thing, I was thinking about it yesterday, because I'm working on Sunday, no more than yourself, and you're trying to plan what time am I going to get there, and then the realisation hits you. Sure, there's no curtain raiser, there's no minor match, the Jubilee team will be out when the place will probably be half empty, and it does lead to probably legitimate enough questions about this compact calendar, and could you just extend it by another week or two, and the impact that it would have as a result.
Yeah, I look, as a club player and a person who's still playing a bit of club, Damien, I really feel that it could go back 3 weeks. And I think what that allows is, I was just listening to Conor Whelan speaking during the week, he got his Player of the Month award, and like, he feels, you know, it's because of the 2 week gap, I suppose there's no real allowance for a big build up like and stuff like that. And I think maybe if you could push it back a few weeks, we'd still get things done, like we'd still get county finals played in October. You know what I mean? And I just feel we are trying to squash it all in. As you said, like I mean, the football we got last weekend, and people are going to talk about that Monday. So then Tuesday, you could start thinking about the hurling. you know, because of the small gap between games, Damien, and as you know, working in the media, it's hard to get down and even get a night to talk to the players and management to allow that build up. Like if you take, for example, suppose Limerick did it the Monday evening, I think straight away in the Gaelic grounds. Kilkenny did it soon afterwards, and that's not the players' fault or anything. You know, that's they need to focus because the window is smaller. So for me, Damien, I think this can get back, pushed back 3 weeks and we'd still have really good club championships. That'd be my opinion on it.
Right, let's you and I aren't going to solve that problem over the next couple of minutes, so let's chat about the match itself. Obviously, the two teams named this morning, we'll come to Limerick in a minute, but you look at that Kilkenny team and every All-Ireland final, there's rumours and there's suggestions and this fella's struggling and that fella's struggling. The man at the centre of it all this time around is David Blanchfield. Now, this goes from a bit of an injury to a rib from some people to a punctured lung with other people, but there seems to be a consensus that that Kilkenny team will not start as has been named.
Yeah, I don't think it will, Damien. You know, like, I mean, that his injury is a very significant one, and you know, they've named him to start, but I'd say there's probably more chance of myself, yourself lining out wing back on Sunday, Damien. Who is your replacement is going to be? You're probably looking at maybe Dara Corcoran. Some people have said Killian Buckley, but I think the bounce they're getting off Killian from the bench at the moment, I think they'll probably hold him in reserve. And obviously Killian has a big day tomorrow as well with his wedding, so maybe he has enough things to worry about now at the moment without having to worry about getting a starting position. But I'd say Dara Corcoran will probably come in instead of him. But even the Kilkenny team since the final last year, Damien, if I could call out a few names here, like say Mikey Carey started last year, he's out. Connor Brown, he started last year, he's out, I believe he's gone travelling. Like Keen Kenny started, he's a sub this year, and Pádraig Walsh started at number 11 and he's a sub this year. And like you've the likes of Connor Fogarty is starting, Tom Phelan starting the half forward line, and John Donnelly starting as well. So there is changes to Kilkenny team. I'm sure we'll talk about Limerick in a second, but you know, that's four new guys are going to be in that didn't start the All-Ireland final last year. So it is a kind of a, there's a different feel, a different vibe about this Kilkenny team, in my opinion, Damien.
And,
yeah.
And in a world where there was 2 points between the sides when the dust settled last year, so many questions have been asked about where are Limerick relative to the team that have been all conquering in recent years. The margin between the two teams has narrowed even more in advance of the final on Sunday.
Absolutely. Like if we talk about Kilkenny, you talk about the changes to the Limerick team, like the team that started last year. I think there's three guys that won't start this Sunday. Sean Finn being one, Declan Hannan being another, and Graham Mulcahy won't start, albeit he's a sub, but Peter Casey will start instead of him, and Keen Lynch has come in. So, you know, I suppose while Sean Finn and Declan Hannan are out, Keen Lynch and Peter Casey are in from the start this year. You know, and David Reedy is starting as well. So, I think they've maybe stronger up front, but, you know, obviously bringing Mike Casey in is massive to be able to do that, and you're pushing back Kyle Hayes from that 11 spot back to wing back this year. But I mean, it's just the loss of Sean Finn. Just going through the substitutes here, Damien, from last year, and Owen Cody is in line for Hurler Deer. I think we can all agree with that. Owen Cody was actually taken off with 58 minute last year, and I think if Owen Cody's getting taken off in the 58 minute this year, you know, it'd be hard to see Kilkenny win the game with the form he's in and what he's bringing to the table and the leader that he is from. But I think a lot of that goes down to, you know, for a lot of time, if he was in around Sean Finn, just how good he was. And he's a hard guy to replace, Damien, isn't he? And yeah. I'd say Kilkenny, are they going to look at maybe targeting Mike Casey with Owen Cody, you know, for the power and the pace, and try and suck him out the field a small bit? And you know, I just think there's so many potential matchups, but there's a lot of changes in both teams too. Like,
well, when you talk about changes, like, we all consumed ourselves in the run-up to the semi-final from a Limerick perspective as to how they'd set up against Galway, and, you know, Kyle Hayes named at six, and then Will O'Donoghue, this rabbit out of the hat that was played in there instead. Like, John Kiley and Paul Kinnerk and the management team, they effectively played their trump card that weekend. Do you expect them to go like for like this weekend, or will Derek Ling and his selectors have a sleepless night tomorrow night trying to work out how the various pieces of that jigsaw will fit together? Because I got the sense that Limerick knew well in advance what they were going to do, and from the minute that they announced that Declan Hannan was out, John Kiley was planning behind closed doors for what we saw play out in Croke Park 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, and look, the when you talk about Declan Hannan, you talk about leader and role model and guy who does it on the big day, and they do hold Will O'Donoghue in the same regard, Damien. You know, talking to anybody who'd be in or around there, like, he's a big leader for him, he's a big day player for him. You know, he's when it wasn't going well in the Munster Championship, Will O'Donoghue, who was the guy, you know, who really grabbed it by the scruff of the neck and pulled him on in games when, you know, he was when it just wasn't happening for the rest of the group. So I do feel he will go to six as well, and I suppose he does play a lot of his hurling for his club at six. He's used to that position, and I just feel like for both teams, Damien, right, I think they're going to be looking at the semi-finals, and they're going to be looking at specific time frames in the semi-finals. So Kilkenny are going to probably look at the Galway-Limerick game and look at that first 25 minutes where Will O'Donoghue got pulled out of position, where, you know, Aina Murphy's puckouts were finding Cathal Mannion in space. They had created space. They were getting shots off. They were working the ball well. But then I suppose, you know, obviously the capitulation after that when Limerick got settled and they started taking over, Will O'Donoghue included, and they outscore Galway 118 to 6 points. So I think, you know, Kilkenny are going to try and look at that period, minute 0 to minute 25, to say, right, what can we get out of this to try and go at them? Flip side of that then, I'm sure Limerick are going to look at this period between half-time, Damien, and I suppose maybe 17, 18 minutes into the second half, where Clare outscore Kilkenny 9 points to 2 because they don't play the sweeper and they're going man-on-man. So I just feel, you know, we know Limerick don't play a sweeper, so I think Limerick will look at that period and go, what worked really well for Clare? Do we do that? Can we do that? How are we going to make hay here? Where did they get the shots off? How did they outscore them 9 points to 2? And then, as I said, on the flip side, Derek Ling and his management will look at, well, how did Galway do so much against Limerick? But, you know, you've got two great management teams as well who are obviously going to learn from those mistakes. But I just feel, Damien, if they are going to try and focus in on maybe a period of play from the semi-finals, I think those two periods will be big for them to have a look at. Like,
can I ask you about that third quarter? Because, like, we talk about the psychology of sport and the work that Caroline Currid has done with Limerick in recent years. But I guarantee you, on the television and radio coverage on both RTE and the BBC and local radio at the weekend, there will be a mention in the first half about Limerick's third quarter. And it has now almost become mythological in terms of, irrespective of what the game is at half time, you expect that swing to now happen. And does that seep into the opposition that you come back out for the start of the second half, John Keenan's about to throw the ball in, and you're saying to yourself, they're going to blitz us for the next 15 minutes?
Yeah, it's interesting, I suppose, yeah. I suppose that, and they have proven it again and again, Damien, haven't they? Like, what they do after half time to teams, obviously most recently in the semi final, like, and obviously it didn't work. It went totally the opposite way for Kilkenny in the semi final. So they'll have big learnings as to what they need to do at half time. But I think a lot of that goes down to they're getting them in, they're regrouping. You know, you can't get any messages on, well, you're not supposed to get any messages onto the field right now. Although some teams are doing it and they're doing it well, and fair play to them for doing it. I think the rest of us are maybe just jealous that we're not thinking of these things. And I think when you can get the group in and you have a hurling brain like Paul Kinnock that could maybe talk to guys individually, you know, you have that, you know, 10, 12 minute period of time to settle down, lads, just to talk to them, maybe get the backs together, the forwards together, and to be able to get your message in, which you just can't get in on, you know, on during the game. And, like, to be honest, Damien, you've been pitch side. I'd be lucky enough to be on the pitch. Someone roaring in at you on Ireland final day is waste time anyway.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to hear them with the full house there. You won't hear them. So I think it's what they're doing at half time, how they're resetting. They mightn't be saying too much, but they're just calm. Say, right, this needs to happen now. You need to keep this going. And again, I go back to Paul Kinnock and the management team there, the likes of Donal O'Grady and these guys, Alan Cunningham, these lads, you know, they're really good hurling people as well. And obviously, John Kiely has a word with the group too. But I'd say they mightn't have to say too much because of the leaders in the dressing room. But I just think it's the way they regroup at halftime, and they know exactly what they're going at when they come back out in the field in the second half. And look, to be fair to them, you can do all the talking you want, but they have the players that are carrying it out week in, week out, Damien. And I suppose that's what makes them so hard what makes them so good.
Is that what makes them marginal favourites? And it's just marginal favourites?
Yeah, marginal favourites. Like, I love those stats. Like,
Shane, we're 12 minutes into this chat before I get a stats bomb. This isn't good enough. Come on.
I come in here and I have a right good one for you in a minute now, right? first quarter of the match last year, Limerick get off 12 shots, 10 scores. Kilkenny get off 10 shots, 8 scores, right? So they're with him in the first half. Now, albeit Kilkenny gave Limerick the dream start last year, Damien. They're two massive leaders for him get scores on the board. Dermot Burns gets a point, and then a few minutes later, Garrod Hegarty gets a goal. And while it's 1-1 on the board, it feels like it's 1-5 or 1-6 in the crowd because of the two guys that got the scores, right? Mm. So they look at that and they can't give it to them, right? So that's the first quarter. Even if we go to the last quarter, talk about staying with Limerick, and that's what teams need to do, and not every team does. The last quarter of the game, All Ireland final last year, both teams 9 shots, both teams 6 scores. Kilkenny are the experts at hanging in, at staying there all the time. Whereas other teams just will fade out by the last quarter. They'll be gassed. They'll have given everything. And you know what? The strength and conditioning, the physical fitness of Kilkenny is often maybe forgotten about because we just see them as just this traditional hurling team. They are seriously fit teams, so they are. And then in turnovers, you talk about matching them for work rate. Kilkenny got 1-8 from turnovers. Limerick got 11 points from turnovers. Like, they really did match them, man, in every facet of the game. But you know, Limerick won out the game. So I just think it just proves that Kilkenny are able to stay with them. And I think Kilkenny are probably a better team now as well, Damien. You know, I think they're a more experienced team. Okay, they lost the greatest hurling manager of all time, but Derek came in, he was there as a selector, he knows what it takes to win as a player, he's won as a manager as well with the 20s, and a lot of these guys have huge respect for him. Throw in Peter Barry and Michael Rice, you've got a serious team there of guys who know how to win in the big day. So I that's why I think it's gearing up for a seriously good game. Now, Damien, here's the stat for you, right? And for the people at home listening. Limerick, I heard this one the other day, right? This Limerick group have played in Croke Park 11 times, including the 2018 league final, right? They've won 10 times. And the 10 times that they've won, they have played into Hill 16 in the second half. The one time they lost was against Kilkenny in 2019. They played into the Davin Inn for the second half. So watch for the toss at the weekend, everyone. So there's a little stat to make it a bit more interesting.
There you have it. So I was about to ask you about pairings and which markups are the ones that you're most looking forward to. But in reality, the whole thing will be decided by Owen Cody and Kyle Hayes before a ball is even thrown in.
It's coming down to John Keenan's coin toss. There you go.
We can all go home at 5 minutes before throwing. Which are the most captivating of who'll pick up who? And like, it's amazing how much this now consumes all of the talking points in advance of this. Like, you know, TJ's named at 14. Will he drift out into the half forward line? How do you counteract Kyle Hayes and Dermot Burns as attacking wing backs? Like, it's, listen, who'd be a manager when all of the time is consumed by who do you put here, who do you put there?
Come here, Tarrant. And I suppose what you need to make the Limerick half back line do, Damien, is defend. And that might sound ridiculous, people are going, but sure, of course, they're down as defenders. But I'm talking about actually defending, actually going back towards their own goal and defending, because they are a serious force of a line. When their ball has come raining down on top of them, they're facing forward. But teams that are doing well maybe against them are making them defend, are pushing on against them and turning them back towards their own goal. That's my opinion on it. And that's where, if you look at teams who have done well against them, Clare, for example, even Galway in that period, they were pushing them back, they were making them go back towards their own goal and actually making them defend. So that's where I feel they have to go with it. The other side of it is Kilkenny's half-back line, for me, will have to push on Limerick. Because Limerick's half forward line scored 113 from play last year in the All Ireland final, and if that happens again, I can only see one result. So that's something like that. We mightn't see Richie Reid sitting as deep. You know, they might push on him. I feel they'll have to push on him. Hegarty, Morrissey, and probably Keane Lynch there at 11, and then just trust the guys behind them. And if you go back into the battles round about, right? Obviously, the key battle for a lot of people on everyone's lips is Hugh Lawler versus Aaron Gillan. Both guys more or less guaranteed an All Star. One of them in the form of Aaron Gillan in front runner for Hurler of the Year. So there's two of your form guys going head to head. And if you're trying to stop Limerick, you have to stop Aaron Gillan. Look what he's done thus far. Many have tried. I think Hugh Lawler, you know, it'll be a serious, serious battle, I think, at the weekend.
Okay.
Midfield then, is who's going to mark Darragh Donovan? Is Conor Fogarty going to get the job to try and shut him down and the ball he's giving in? Or will they say to Adrian Mullen, you go mark him, hurl him and get your few points as well? For me, it'll probably be Conor Fogarty tasked with trying to shut down Darragh Donovan and that kind of, what we call him, that Pirlo role he plays there, like the quality of ball. He's the link player. He knows where the posts are. And again, he's had a super year. Then the other side of the field, then Damien, I'd be very interested to see who's going to actually mark Owen Cody. Barry Nash will want to hurl, Dan Morrissey will stay 3. So it probably could be Mike Casey. And just to see that battle and how it'll play out, again, Owen Cody in line for Hurler of the Year. Mike Casey, he's a guy for the big day. So I think that'll be a great battle. whoever wins that will go a long way. And then finally, TJ, if he goes 14, himself and Dan. I think Dan Morrissey is probably one of the most, I won't say underrated because he is rated by hurling people, but maybe goes under the radar of the bigger names in the Limerick team. But he's been phenomenal all year. And TJ, who's, I think he's turning 36 this year, if he's there 14, what game he's going to have? He's more of a link player now and assists rather than scores from play. Obviously, his free taking is phenomenal, Damon, and his sidelines and everything. But I just think that would be an unbelievable battle as well between Dan and TJ. Okay. So your four battles there, you know, whoever comes out on top of him, Damon, they'll have a big say where Liam McCarthy's going. Like,
I've told the family I won't be around on the 5th of August because I'm clearing the decks for the replay. Briefly, in a word, if you would, the All-Ireland champion 2023 will be
Limerick.
Okay. To finish, you mentioned there about the sleepless nights, and I'm thinking of 09, 10 and 11. So you would have been involved in three All-Ireland finals back-to-back. Does it get easier over time? And if I was to ask you to reflect on your All-Ireland finals, do 9 and 11 as the ones that slip away come to your mind quicker than 10, which is the one where you won your first All-Ireland medal?
Yeah, it's a good one. Yeah, I suppose. Look, I think 9 was kind of an unknown for the majority of us as a group, but me personally, Damien, in that I couldn't really ask anyone from my parish what's it like to play in an All-Ireland Senior Hurling Final because it wasn't done before. So I didn't really have any reference close by, but it was the kind of the one I just think we were most looking forward to. And I think the more of them you play, maybe the more worried you are about that, the potential things that go wrong from being there. But it's a great build-up, Damien. It's a fantastic. As I said, the night before, you don't sleep much. I suppose not many teams, you know, are going up the night before now because of the motorway and the way it is. So our routine would be we'd meet in Portlaoise, and we'd all go up together then and stop off for, you know, a bit of grub and a bit of a pre-game warm up. But you know, it doesn't get any easier, I think, with the more you play, because as I said, maybe the more you're there, even though the more comfortable you are in surroundings, you can understand the more potential things that could go wrong. But all very enjoyable. What's the one that I think about the most? The one I probably think about the most is 2009. I thought it was maybe one of the best games of hurling ever, even to be involved in or watch. And look, we didn't win it. Kilkenny won it. They're a phenomenal team. And I suppose people say to me, I actually played five All-Irelands, Damien. I won one. They were all against Kilkenny. And you know, it did bother me for a long time to only have the one medal, but I'm at peace with it now. I'm okay with it. And I can look back and say, I'm in a very, very lucky club to even have played an All-Ireland final. You know, so it's a great club to be part of.
Yeah, once an All-Ireland winner, always an All-Ireland winner. Shane McGrath, enjoy the game. Look forward to seeing you in the flesh on Sunday. And thanks so much for your time as always.
Game on.
Hurley.
Game on.
Football.
We're going to chat racing with Jane Mangan and check in at the Open again before the end of the programme. But in advance of that, a big shock this morning in the FIFA Women's World Cup in Group B, which is Ireland's group with Nigeria and Canada playing out a scoreless draw. Canada, let's be very honest, would have been expected to have won this. We'll hear from their manager, Bev Priestman, in just a second. But in advance of that, the Nigerian hero, their goalkeeper, Chiamaka Enedozie, who saved a penalty in the 50th minute to get a big result for the Nigerians.
The FIFA Women's World Cup 2023.
Live on RTE2FM.
Chiamaka, you captained the team today, and that all-important save with the most experienced player on the pitch, Sinclair. I'm sure it must be a proud moment for you today.
Yeah, it's a proud moment for me and my family today. Because when I was coming to this competition, I told myself, girl, come on, enjoy yourself, relax, and just do your best. And today I was very ready, and I'm happy that we got a point, like I said.
Bev, Canada 0, Nigeria 0, just your first thoughts on that match.
I think disappointed not to come away with the 3 points, but I think tournament football, we opened the Olympic Games with a draw. You know, we're not getting too hung up on that. We very quickly move on to game two. Yeah, I think we knew what they would do, right? They'd be direct and break whenever you give them that chance, and we'll grow from game one. That's what we said. We wasn't going to be perfect. It wasn't perfect, but there were some positives to draw from that, and I think some relevance going into game two for sure against Ireland.
So that game against Ireland is on Wednesday, live and here on 2FM, live on RT2 television as well. Australia play Nigeria on Thursday. So a big game potentially for Ireland now against Canada. Big game tonight at Dalymount Park. The Sports Direct FAI Cup gets underway tonight. The big game is the Dublin Derby, the real Dublin Derby in terms of geography. Bohemians and Shells, a little over a kilometre separating the two clubs there for us. John Kenny.
It's a heavy, muggy night ahead of this Dublin Derby as Bows welcome near neighbours Shelburne to Dalyman Park. One of six first-round ties taking place tonight, with the rest of the games spread out over the weekend into Sunday evening. It's the second meeting in a week between the pair. Last week's game in Talca ending in a draw. And having lost in last year's final to Derry City, Shells won't want to go out in the very first round. And they come into this game against Bows unbeaten against their great Dublin rivals in their last five competitive games. They also won the 2022 Cup quarter-final last season between the pair. Bows will be lifted by Danny Grant, re-signing for the club, and Ali Coote and James Akintunde are also fit to play tonight. There has to be a winner this evening. We could go to extra time and penalties indeed.
Could be a long night ahead at Dalymount. That's John Kenny looking ahead to that game. From soccer to this.
Game on.
Racing.
Jane Mangan's with me. Hiya, Jane.
I'm very well, Damien. From the Women's World Cup to Taylor Swift ticket mania. This weekend is about the female athletes in equine form at the Curragh.
Did you get tickets?
I did, all important. I'd have a different tone of voice if I didn't.
Half of the nation hates you now because you're the first person that I actually know who managed to get Taylor Swift tickets. So,
for the price I paid, I should be having lunch with Taylor, here we are.
If I had your money, I'd burn me own. Anyway, listen, we'll look ahead to the Curragh, the big standout race tomorrow. It's a good card and a couple of really good, sharp, fast, energetic races. But the Irish Oaks, 3:45 tomorrow afternoon. Is the simple question here, which of the four O'Brien runners will give him his seventh Oaks?
Yeah, that would be a record-breaking seventh Oaks for him. He's currently a six-time winner of the race alongside Sir Michael Stout. If you want to take that analogy, that's the lazy analysis of the race. You could just say which of the O'Brien horses wins. Is it Save the Last Dance, who was runner-up to Soul Sister at Epsom, or is it Warm Heart, who won the Ribblesdale at Ascot, beating Lumiere Rock, who reopposes? But I think Lumiere Rock is an interesting horse. On softer ground, whether she'll handle that, we don't know. I think Blue Stocking is better than her third position in the Ribblesdale suggested, because she didn't really have the perfect run. She met a little bit of traffic off the home bend. Colin Keane booked for a race Beckett in the Judman colours. That remind anybody of a certain Westover in the Irish Derby last year? And I think Dermot Weld, as is that. Dermot has won this race a long time ago. He won't appreciate me saying this, but Blue Wind won it for him in 1981. Dance Design in 1996. As is that, with Chris Hayes aboard, will love the rain that's forecast, and she will stay given how well she ran in the Munster Oaks at Cork last time. There's a good supporting card as well. We've got the Group 2 Sapphire Stakes, Art Power. This could really be... This is a sprint, but it's one that could be going for export, because Art Power for Tim Easterby and White Lavender for Carl Burke, they'll probably be the two top of the market, but don't underestimate Ladies Church for Johnny Murta. He's booked Ryan Moore, won the race last year. She's a fast filly. And of the two-year-olds, the 2 o'clock race, the Anglesey Stakes, Pearls and Rubies was just denied by Gavin Cromwell Snellen in the Chesham at Royal Ascot. This is her next start back. I think she'll be very hard to beat. But we're on air on RTE television at 1:45 tomorrow. I'm in company. Good company tomorrow, Damien. I've got Fran Berry, Emmett McNamara and Shane Cott alongside me, as well as, of course, Katie, Brian and Richard. And whatever the weather, we'll be ready.
Okay, look forward to it. Anyone's looking for Taylor Swift tickets, it's at Jane_Mangan, isn't it, on Twitter? You know, people can just slide into your DMs, as young people do nowadays.
Look, next week we'll be talking Coldplay. It's all in a whirlwind.
Yeah, geez, you've a better social life than I do. Jane, look after yourself. Stay safe. Thanks so much
Thanks
for being with
Damien.
Us. Jane Mangan with us there. We're going to go from racing at the Curragh to the far more sedate backdrop of Hoylake. Round two of the Open ongoing. Let's get the latest from Gary Moran.
Here for the guts of three more hours, but it would take a miracle for anyone to overhaul the 36-year-old American Brian Harman. He looks certain to lead at halfway. The world number 26 birdied the second, third, fourth and fifth and parred everything else until he holed from 15 feet for an eagle on the 18th in his best of the day, 6 under par 65. On 10 under, he's 5 clear of second place Tommy Fleetwood, who still has 4 to play, and 7 clear of those tied for third, Minwoo Lee and Shubhankar Sharma, who have finished, plus Jordan Spieth, Sepp Straka and Cam Young, all well into the back nines. Indeed, Straka, the American-based Austrian, is chasing a Ryder Cup place, has birdied 5 of his last 6 holes and is now on the 18th. conditions have been tricky for most of the day, dry but winds gusting at 25 miles per hour. And the leading Irishman, Rory McIlroy, wasn't dissatisfied with a 1 under par 70 that left him on a 1 under total. Yes, 9 behind Harman, but tied 13th and only 2 off third place. His round nicely capped off and he held an 8-footer for a birdie at the last. And the other two Irish players with a chance of making the cut, Padraig Harrington 3 over with 2 to play, Shane Lowry 3 over with 5 to play, the projected cut 3 over.
Thanks to Gary Moran at Hoylake. Updates of the Open across Saturday and Sunday sports all weekend. Jane mentioned racing at the Curragh. The Women's World Cup continues across RTE2 television. And obviously the All-Ireland Hurling Final on Sunday will dominate Sunday sport on Radio 1 and the Sunday game live in the evening programme on RTE2 television as well. That brings the programme to a conclusion tonight. Thank you very much for your company over the course of the last hour. Connor's on the way with the chart show. Brian Moss was our broadcast coordinator this evening. Ronan Lawler produced. From Damien O'Mara, till next time, good night. RTE 2FM.